to do, then he wouldn't tell anyone else to choose wrongly. Not even the youngest student in Hogwarts. And yet, for those who did follow in his footsteps, he hoped they would remember that Gryffindor had told his house that it was all right for them to be happier than him. That red and gold would be bright, warm colours from now on. And Helga had promised him, weeping, that when she was headmistress, she would make sure of it. Whereupon, Godric had died and left no ghost behind him, and Harry had shoved the book back to Hermione and walked away a little, so she wouldn't see him crying. You wouldn't think that a book with an innocent title like The Patronus Charm, Wizards Who Could and Couldn't, would be the saddest book Harry had ever read. Harry. Harry didn't want that, to be in that book. Harry didn't want that. The rest of the school just seemed to think that no Patronus meant bad person, plain and simple. Somehow, the fact that Godric Gryffindor also hadn't been able to cast the Patronus charm seemed not to get repeated. Maybe people didn't talk about it to respect his last wish. Fred and George probably didn't know, and Harry certainly wasn't about to tell them. Or maybe the other failures didn't mention it because it was less shameful. The smaller loss of pride and status to be thought dark, rather than unhappy. Harry saw that Hermione, beside him, was blinking hard, and wondered if she was thinking of Rowena Ravenclaw, who'd also loved books.
"Okay," Harry whispered. "Happier thoughts. If you do go to a full corporeal Patronus, what do you think your animal will be?"
"An otter,"
Hermione said at once.
"An otter?"
Harry whispered incredulously.
"Yes, an otter," said Hermione. "What about yours?"
"A peregrine falcon," Harry said without hesitation. "It can dive faster than 300 kilometers per hour. It's the fastest living creature there is."
The peregrine falcon had been Harry's favourite animal since forever. Harry was determined to become an animagus someday, just to get that as his form, and fly by the strength of his own wings and see the land below with sharper eyes.
"But why an otter?"
Hermione smiled, but didn't say anything. And the vast doors of Hogwarts swung open. They walked for a time, the children, over a pathway that led toward the unforbidden forest, and continued through the forest itself. The sun was lowering to near the horizon, the shadows long. The sunlight filtered through the bare branches of the winter trees, for it was January, and the first years the last to learn that day. Then the path swerved and took a new direction, and they all saw it in the distance, the clearing in the forest, and the sere winter grounds, yellowing dried grass, whitened by a few small remnants of snow. The human figures still small at that range, the two spots of dim white light from the Aura's Patronuses and the brighter spot of silver light from the Headmaster's, next to something. Harry squinted. Something. It must have been purely Harry's imagination, because there shouldn't have been any way for a Dementor to reach past three corporeal Patronuses. But he thought he could feel a touch of emptiness brushing at his mind, brushing straight at the soft inner centre of himself without any respect for oculomancy barriers. Seamus Finnegan was ashen and trembling as he rejoined the students milling about on the withered and snow-spotted grass. Seamus's Patronus charm had been successful, but there was still that interval between when the headmaster dispelled his own Patronus and when you were supposed to cast your own, when you faced the Dementor's fear unshielded. Up to 20 seconds of exposure at 5 paces was certainly safe, even for an 11-year-old wizard, with weak resistance and still maturing brain. There was a lot of variance in how hard the Dementor's power hit people, which was another thing not quite understood, but 20 seconds was definitely safe. 40 seconds of Dementor exposure at 5 paces might possibly have been enough to cause permanent damage, though only to the most sensitive subjects. It was harsh training, even by the standards of Hogwarts, where the way you learned to fly on a hippogriff was by being tossed on one and told to get going. Harry was no fan of overprotectiveness, and if you looked at the difference in maturity between a 4th year in Hogwarts and a 14-year-old muggle, it was clear that muggles were smothering their children. But even Harry had started to wonder if this was pushing it. Not every hurt could be healed afterward. But if you couldn't cast the spell under those conditions, it meant you couldn't rely on using the Patronus charm to defend yourself. Overconfidence was even more dangerous to wizards than to muggles. Dementors could drain your magic and your physical vitality, not just your happy thoughts, which meant you might not be able to apparate away if you waited too long, or if you didn't recognize the approaching fear until the Dementor was within range for its attack. During his reading, Harry had discovered with considerable horror that some books claimed the Dementor's kiss would eat your soul, and that this was the reason for the permanent mindless coma into which it put the victims, and that wizards who believed this had deliberately used the Dementor's kiss to execute criminals. It was a certainty that some called criminals were innocent, and even if they weren't, destroying their souls? If Harry had believed in souls, he would have drawn a blank. He just couldn't think of an appropriate response to that. The headmaster was taking security seriously, and so there were 3 aurors standing guard. Their leader was an Asianish-looking man, solemn without being grim, or a Komodo, whose wand never left his hand. His Patronus, an orangutan of solid moonlight, paced back and forth between the Dementor and the 1st years awaiting their turn. Beside the orangutan moved the bright white panther of Aura Butinaro, a man with a piercing gaze, long black hair in a ponytail, and a long braided goatee. Those 2 auras and their 2 Patronuses were all watching the Dementor. On the opposite side of the students was the resting aura Gorianov, tall and thin and pale and unshaven, sitting back on a chair he had conjured without word or wand, and maintaining an absent-minded poker face as he scanned the entire scene. Professor Quirrell had shown up not long after the 1st years began their attempts, and his eyes never strayed far from Harry. The tiny Professor Flitwick, who had been a champion duelist, was fiddling absently with his wand, and his eyes, peering out from within the huge puffy beard that served as his face, stayed focused on Professor Quirrell. And it must have been Harry's imagination, but Professor Quirrell seemed to wince slightly each time the headmaster's Patronus winked out to test the next student. Maybe Professor Quirrell was imagining the same placebo effect as Harry, that backwash of emptiness caressing at his mind.
"Anthony Goldstein," called the voice of the headmaster.
Harry quietly walked toward Seamus, even as Anthony began to approach the shining silver phoenix and whatever it was beneath the tattered cloak.
"What did you see?"
Harry asked Seamus in a low voice. A lot of students hadn't answered Harry when he'd tried to gather the data, but Seamus was Finnegan of Chaos, one of Harry's lieutenants. Maybe that wasn't fair, but...
"Dead," said Seamus in a whisper. "Greyish and slimy. Dead and left in water for a while."
Harry nodded.
"That's what a lot of people see," Harry said.
He projected confidence, even though it was fake, because Seamus needed it.
"Go eat some chocolate. You'll feel better."
Seamus nodded and stumbled off toward the table of healing sweets.
"Expecto Patronum!" cried
a young boy's voice. Then there were gasps of shock, even from the auras. Harry spun around to look. There was a brilliant silver bird standing between Anthony Goldstein and the cage. The bird reared its head and let out a cry, and the cry was also silver, as bright and hard and beautiful as metal. And something in the back of Harry's mind said,
"If that's a peregrine falcon, I'm going to strangle him in his sleep."
"Shut up," Harry said to the thought.
"Do you want us to be a dark wizard? What's the point? You're going to end up as one eventually."
That wasn't something Harry would usually have thought.
"It's a placebo effect,"
Harry told himself again.
"The Dementor can't actually get to me through 3 corporeal Patronuses. I'm just imagining what I think it's like. When I actually face the Dementor, it'll feel completely different. And then I'll know I was just being silly before."
A slight chill went down Harry's spine then, because he had a feeling that, yes, it would be completely different, and not in a positive direction. The blazing silver phoenix sprang back into existence from the headmaster's wand, the lesser bird vanished, and Anthony Goldstein began to walk back. The headmaster was coming with Anthony instead of calling out the next name, the Patronus waiting behind to guard the Dementor. Harry glanced over to where Hermione was standing, just behind the glowing panther. Hermione's turn would have come next, but had apparently just been delayed. She looked stressed. Earlier, she'd politely asked Harry to please stop trying to de-stress her. Dumbledore was smiling slightly as he escorted Anthony back toward the others, smiling only slightly, because the headmaster looked very, very tired.
"Unbelievable," said Dumbledore in a voice that sounded much weaker than his accustomed boom. "A corporeal Patronus in his first year, and an astounding number of successes among the other young students. Quirinus, I must acknowledge that you have proved your point."
Professor Quirrell inclined his head.
"A simple enough guess, I should think. A Dementor attacks through fear, and children are less afraid."
"Less afraid,"
said Aura Gorianoff from where he was sitting.
"So I said as well,"
said Dumbledore.
"And Professor Quirrell pointed out that adults had more courage, not less to fear, which thought, I confess, had never occurred to me before."
"That was not my precise phrasing," Professor Quirrell said dryly. "But it will do. And the rest of our agreement, Headmaster?"
"As you say,"
Dumbledore said reluctantly.
"I admit I was not expecting to lose that wager, Quirinus, but you have proven your wisdom."
All the students were looking at them, puzzled, except Hermione, who was staring in the direction of the cage and the tall, decaying robes, and Harry, who was watching everyone, since he was imagining himself feeling paranoid.
Professor Quirrell said, in tones that did not invite further comments,
"I am allowed to teach the killing curse to students who wish to learn it, which will render them considerably safer from dark wizards and other pests, and it is foolish to think they will otherwise know no deadly magics."
Professor Quirrell paused, his eyes narrowing.
"Headmaster, I respectfully observe that you are not looking well. I suggest leaving the remainder of the day's task to Professor Flitwick."
Dumbledore shook his head.
"We are almost done for the day, Quirinus. I will last."
Hermione had approached Antony.
"Captain Goldstein,"
she said, and her voice trembled only a little,
"can you give me any advice?"
"Don't be afraid," Antony said firmly. "Don't think about anything it tries to make you think about. You're not just holding up the wand in front of you as a shield against the fear. You're brandishing your wand to drive the fear away. That's how you make a happy thought into something solid."
Antony shrugged helplessly.
"I mean, I heard all that before, but..."
Other students were starting to congregate around Antony with their own questions.
"Miss Granger,"
the headmaster said. His voice might have been gentle, or just weakened. Hermione straightened her shoulders and followed him.
"What did you see under the cloak?"
Harry said to Antony. Antony looked at Harry, surprised, and then answered,
"A very tall man who was dead. I mean, sort of dead, shaped, and dead-coloured. It hurt to see him, and I knew that was the Dementor, trying to get at me."
Harry looked back out at where Hermione was confronting the cage and the cloak. Hermione raised her wand into position for the first gestures. The headmaster's phoenix winked out of existence, and Hermione gave a tiny, pathetic shriek. Flinched, took a step back. Harry could see her wand moving, and then she brandished it and said,
"Expecto Patronum!"
Nothing happened. Hermione turned and ran.
"Expecto Patronum!"
said the headmaster's deep voice, and the silver phoenix blazed back to life. The young girl stumbled and kept running, strange sounds beginning to come from her throat.
"Hermione!"
Susan yelled it, and Hannah and Daphne and Ernie, and they all started to run toward her, even as Harry, who was always thinking one step ahead, spun on his own heel and ran for the table with the chocolate. Even after Harry had shoved the chocolate into Hermione's mouth and she chewed and swallowed, she was still breathing in great gasps and crying, and her eyes still seemed unfocused.
"She can't have been permanently demented,"
Harry thought desperately at the confusion inside him, the horrible fear and deathly fury beginning to twist around each other.
"She can't have been... She wasn't exposed for even 10 seconds, let alone 40.
But she could be temporarily demented, as Harry realized in that moment. There wasn't any rule that you couldn't be temporarily injured by a Dementor in just 10 seconds if you were sensitive enough. Then Hermione's eyes seemed to focus and dart around and settle on him.
"Harry!"
she gasped, and the other students went silent.
"Harry, don't! Don't!"
Harry was suddenly afraid to ask what he shouldn't do. Was he in her worst memories, or some sleep's nightmare that she was now reliving in waking life?
"Don't go near it!"
said Hermione. Her hand reached out, grabbed him by the lapel of his robes.
"You mustn't go near it, Harry. It spoke to me, Harry. It knows you. It knows you're here."
"What?"
Harry said, and then cursed himself for asking.
"The Dementor!"
said Hermione. Her voice rose to a shriek.
"Professor Quirrell wants it to eat you!"
In the sudden hush, Professor Quirrell came forward a few steps, but he didn't approach any closer. Harry was there, after all.
"Miss Granger," he said, and his voice was grave, "I think you should have some more chocolate."
"Professor Flitwick, don't let Harry try! Send him back!"
The headmaster had arrived by then, and he and Professor Flitwick were exchanging worried looks.
"I did not hear the Dementor speak," the headmaster said. "Still, just ask," said Professor Quirrell, sounding a little weary. "Did the Dementor say how it would get to Harry?"
said the headmaster.
"All his tastiest parts first," said Hermione. It would eat."
Hermione blinked. Some sanity seemed to come back into her eyes. Then she started crying.
"You were too brave, Hermione Granger," the headmaster said.
His voice was gentle and clearly audible.
"Too much braver than I comprehended. You should have turned and run, not endured and tried to complete your charm. When you are older and stronger, Miss Granger, I know that you will try again, and I know that you will succeed."
"I'm sorry,"
Hermione said in gasps.
I'm sorry, Harry. I can't tell you what I saw. I didn't look at it. I didn't dare look at it. I knew it was too horrible to ever be seen."
It should have been Harry, but he had hesitated, because his hands were all chocolatey. And then Ernie and Susan were there, helping Hermione from where she'd fallen on the grass, leading her toward the snacks table. 5 bars of chocolate later, Hermione seemed to be all right again, and she went over and apologized to Professor Quirrell. But she was always watching Harry, every time that he glanced in her direction. He'd stepped toward her only once, and stopped when she had stepped away. Her eyes had silently apologized, and silently pleaded for him to leave her be. Neville Longbottom had seen something dead and half-dissolved, oozing and running with a face like a squashed sponge. It was the worst thing anyone had yet described seeing. Neville had been able to produce a small flicker of light from his wand before, but he had, intelligently and with great presence of mind, turned and run away instead of trying to cast his own Patronus charm. The headmaster had said nothing to the other students, told no one else to be less brave, but Professor Quirrell had calmly observed that if you made the mistake after being warned, that was when ignorance became stupidity.
"Professor Quirrell,"
Harry said in a low voice, having come as close to the defense professor as he dared,
"what do you see when you..."
"Don't ask."
The voice was very flat. Harry nodded respectfully.
"What was your original phrasing to the headmaster, if I can ask?"
Dryly,
"Our worst memories can only grow worse as we grow older."
"Ah," Harry said. "Logical."
Something strange flickered in Professor Quirrell's eyes then, as he looked at Harry.
"Let us hope," Professor Quirrell said, "that you succeed upon this try, Mr. Potter. For if you do,
The headmaster may teach you his trick of using a Patronus to send messages that cannot be forged or intercepted, and the military importance of that is impossible to overstate. It would be a tremendous advantage to the Chaos Legion, and some day, I suspect, this entire country. But if you do not succeed, Mr. Potter, well, I shall understand.
Morag MacDougall had said in a wavering voice,
"Ouch!"
And Dumbledore had recast his Patronus right away. Bhavati Patel had produced a corporeal Patronus in the form of a tiger, larger than Dumbledore's phoenix, though not nearly as bright. There had been a great burst of applause from all the watchers, though not the same shock as when Antony had done it. And then, it was Harry's turn. The headmaster called the name of Harry Potter, and Harry was afraid. He knew, that he was going to fail, and he knew that it was going to hurt. But he still had to try, because sometimes, in the presence of a Dementor, a wizard went from not a flicker of light to a full corporeal Patronus, and no one understood why. And because if Harry couldn't defend himself from Dementors, he had to be able to recognize their approach, recognize the feeling of them in his mind, and run before it was too late.
"What is my worst memory?"
Harry had expected the headmaster to give him a worried look, or a hopeful look, or a deeply wise advice. But instead, Albus Dumbledore only watched him with quiet calm.
"He thinks I'm going to fail, but he won't sabotage me by telling me so,"
thought Harry.
"If he had true words of encouragement to speak, he'd speak them."
The cage came closer. It was already tarnished, but not rusted away to nothing. Not yet. The cloak came closer. It was unravelling and shot through with unpatched holes. It had been new that morning, Aura Gorionov had said.
"Headmaster," Harry said, "what do you see?"
The headmaster's voice was also calm.
"The Dementors are creatures of fear, and as your fear of the Dementor diminishes, so does the fearsomeness of its form. I see a tall, thin, naked man. He is not decaying. He is only slightly painful to look upon. That is all. What do you see, Harry?"
Harry couldn't see under the cloak. Or, that wasn't right. It was that his mind was refusing to see what was under the cloak. No, his mind was trying to see the wrong thing under the cloak. Harry could feel it. His eyes, trying to force a mistake. But Harry had done his best to train himself to notice that tiny feeling of confusion, to automatically flinch away from making stuff up. And every time his mind tried to start inventing a lie about what was under the cloak, that reflex was fast enough to shut it down. Harry looked under the cloak and saw an open question. Harry wouldn't let his mind see something false, and so he didn't see anything. Like, the part of his visual cortex getting that signal was just ceasing to exist. There was a blind spot under the cloak. Harry couldn't know what was under there. Just that it was far worse than any decaying mummy. The unseeable horror beneath the cloak was very close now, but the blazing bird of moonlight, the White Phoenix, yet lay between them. Harry wanted to run away like some of the other students had, Half the ones who'd had no luck with their Patronus charms just hadn't shown up today in the first place. Of those remaining, half had fled before the headmaster had even dispelled his own Patronus, and no one had said a word. There'd been a little laughter when Terry had turned and walked back before his own try, and Susan and Hannah, who'd gone before, had yelled at everyone to shut up. But Harry was the boy who lived, and he would lose much respect if he was seen to give up without even trying. Pride and rolls seemed to diminish and fall away in the presence of whatever lay beneath the cloak.
"Why am I still here?"
It wasn't the shame of others thinking him cowardly that kept Harry's feet in place. It wasn't the hope of repairing his reputation that brought up his wand. It wasn't the desire to master the Patronus charm as magic that moved his fingers into the initial positioning. It was something else. Something that had to oppose whatever lay beneath the cloak. This was the true darkness, and Harry had to find out whether it lay within him, the power to drive it back. Harry had planned to try one final time to think of his book shopping spree with his father, but instead, at the last minute, facing the Dementor, a different memory occurred to him. Something he hadn't tried before. A thought that wasn't warm and happy in the ordinary way, but felt righter somehow. And Harry remembered the stars. Remembered them burning, terribly bright and unwavering in the silent night. He let that image fill him. Fill all of him like an oculomancy barrier across his entire mind. Became once again the bodiless awareness of the void. The bright, silver-shining phoenix vanished, and the Dementor smashed into his mind like the fist of God.
Fear, cold, darkness.
There was an instant when the two forces clashed head-on, when the peaceful, starlit memory held its own against the fear, even as Harry's fingers began the wand motions, practiced until they had become automatic. They weren't warm and happy, those blazing points of light in perfect blackness, but it was an image the Dementor could not easily pierce. For the silent, burning stars were vast and unafraid, and to shine in the cold and darkness was their natural state. But there was a flaw, a crack, a fault line in the immovable object trying to resist that irresistible force. Harry felt a twinge of anger at the Dementor for trying to feed on him, and it was like slipping on wet ice. Harry's mind began to slide sideways into bitterness, black fury, deathly hatred. Harry's wand came up in the final brandish. It felt wrong.
Expecto Patronum!
His voice spoke, the words hollow and pointless. And Harry fell into his dark side. Fell down into his dark side. Further and faster and deeper than ever before. Down, 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 as the slide accelerated, as the Dementor latched onto the exposed and vulnerable parts and fed on them, eating away the light. A fading reflex, scrabbled for warmth, but even as an image of Hermione came to him, or an image of Mum and Dad, the Dementor twisted it, showed him Hermione lying dead on the ground, the corpses of his mother and father, and then even that was sucked away. Into the vacuum rose the memory, the worst memory.
something forgotten so long ago that the neural patterns shouldn't have still existed.
"Lily, take Harry and go! It's him!"
shouted a man's voice.
"Go! Run! I'll hold him off!"
And Harry couldn't help but think, in the empty depths of his dark side, how ridiculously overconfident James Potter had been. "Hold off, Lord Voldemort? With what?" Then the other voice spoke, high-pitched like the hiss of a tea kettle. It was like dry ice laid on Harry's every nerve. Like a brand of metal cooled to liquid helium temperatures and laid on every part of him. And the voice said,
"Avada!"
The wand flew from the boy's nerveless fingers as his body began to convulse and fall, the headmaster's eyes widening in alarm as he began his own Patronus charm.
"Not Harry! Not Harry! Please, not Harry!"
screamed the woman's voice. Whatever was left of Harry listened with all the light drained out of him, in the dead void of his heart, and wondered if she thought that Lord Voldemort would stop because she asked politely.
"Step aside, woman!"
said the shrill voice of burning cold.
"For you I have not come, only the boy."
"Not Harry, please! Have mercy! Have mercy!"
Lily Potter, Harry thought, seemed not to understand what type of people became Dark Lords in the first place, and if this was the best strategy she could conceive to save her child's life, that was her final failure as a mother.
"I give you this rare chance to flee,"
said the shrill voice.
"But I will not trouble myself to subdue you, and your death here will not save your child. Step aside, foolish woman, if you have any sense in you at all."
"Not Harry, please. Take me. Kill me instead."
The empty thing that was Harry wondered if Lily Potter seriously imagined that Lord Voldemort would say, yes, kill her, and then depart, leaving her son unharmed.
"Very well,"
said the voice of death, now sounding coldly amused.
"I accept the bargain. Yourself to die, and the child to live. Now drop your wand, so that I can murder you."
There was a hideous silence. Lord Voldemort began to laugh. Horrible, contemptuous laughter. And then, at last, Lily Potter's voice shrieked in desperate hate. The lethal voice finished first, the curse rapid and precise. A blinding flare of green marked the end of Lily Potter. And the boy in the crib saw it. The eyes. Those two crimson eyes, seeming to glow bright red, to blaze like miniature suns, filling Harry's whole vision as they locked to his own. The other children saw Harry Potter fall. They heard Harry Potter scream, a thin, high-pitched scream that seemed to pierce their ears like knives. There was a brilliant silver flash as the headmaster bellowed, "Expecto Patronum!" and the blazing phoenix returned to being. But Harry Potter's horrible scream went on and on, even as the headmaster scooped up the boy in his arms and bore him away from the Dementor, even as Neville Longbottom and Professor Flitwick both went for the chocolate at the same time, and Hermione knew it. She knew it as she saw it.
she knew that her nightmare had been real. It was somehow coming true. Somehow it was coming true.
"Get him chocolates!"
demanded the voice of Professor Quirrell pointlessly, because Professor Flitwick's tiny form was already cannonballing toward where the headmaster was racing toward the students. Hermione was moving forward herself, though she didn't know what else she meant to do.
"Cast Patronuses!"
shouted the headmaster as he brought Harry behind the auras.
"Everyone who can, get them between Harry and the Dementor! It's still feeding on him!"
There was a moment of frozen horror.
"Expecto Patronum!"
"Expecto Patronum!"
shouted Professor Flitwick and Aura Gorionov, and then Anthony Goldstein, but he failed the first time, and then Parvati Patil, who succeeded, and then Anthony tried again, and his silver bird spread its wings and screamed at the Dementor, and Dean Thomas roared the words like they had been written in letters of fire, and his wand gave birth to a towering white bear. There were 8 blazing Patronuses all in a line between Harry and the Dementor. And Harry went on screaming, and screaming as the headmaster laid him on the dried grass. Hermione couldn't cast a Patronus charm, so she ran toward where Harry lay. In her mind, something tried to guess how long it had been already. Was it 20 seconds? More? There was a dreadful agony and bewilderment on the face of Albus Dumbledore. His long, black wand was in his hand, but he spoke no spells, only looked down at Harry's convulsing body in horror. Hermione didn't know what to do. She didn't know what to do. She didn't understand what was happening, and the most powerful wizard in the world seemed equally at a loss.
"Use your phoenix!"
bellowed Professor Quirrell.
"Take him far away from that Dementor!"
Without a single word, the headmaster scooped up Harry in his arms and vanished in a crack of fire along with the suddenly appearing forks. And the headmaster's Patronus winked out, where it had guarded the Dementor. Horror and confusion, and sudden babble.
"Mr. Potter should recover,"
Professor Quirrell said, raising his voice, but his tone now calm once again.
"I think it was just over 20 seconds.
Then the blazing white phoenix appeared again, like it was flying before them from elsewhere. To Hermione Granger came the creature of moonlight, and it cried to her in Albus Dumbledore's voice.
"It still feeds on him, even here! How? If you know Hermione Granger, you must tell me! Tell me!"
The senior aura turned to stare at her, and so did many students. Professor Flitwick didn't turn. He was now levelling his wand on Professor Quirrell, who was holding out clearly empty hands. Seconds ticked past, uncounted. She couldn't remember it. She couldn't remember the nightmare clearly. She couldn't remember why she had thought it was possible. Why she had been afraid. Hermione realized then what she ought to do, and it was the hardest decision of her life. What if what had happened to Harry happened to her too? All her limbs, cold as death, her vision gone dark, fear overwhelming everything. She'd seen Harry dying, Mum and Dad dying, all her friends dying. Everyone dying. So that, in the end, when she died, she would be alone. That was her secret nightmare she'd never talked about with anyone. that had given the Dementor its power over her. The loneliest thing was to die alone. She didn't want to go to that place again. She didn't. She didn't want to stay there forever.
"You have courage enough for Gryffindor,"
said the calm voice of the Sorting Hat in her memory.
"But you will do what is right in any house I give you. You will learn. You will stand by your friends in any house you choose. So don't be afraid, Hermione Granger. Just decide where you belong."
There was no time for deciding. Harry was dying.
"I can't remember now," said Hermione,
her voice cracking.
"But just hold on. I'll go in front of the Dementor again."
She started to run toward the Dementor.
"Miss Granger!"
squeaked Professor Flitwick, but he made no move to stop her, only kept holding his wand on Professor Quirrell.
"Everyone!"
shouted Aura Komodo in a voice of military command.
"Get your Patronuses out of her way!"
"Flitwick!" roared Professor Quirrell. "Summon Potter's wand!"
Even as Hermione understood, Professor Flitwick was already crying,
"Accio!"
And she saw the stick of wood zooming up from where it lay, almost touching the Dementor's cage. The eyes opened, dead and vacant.
"Harry!"
gasped a voice in the colourless world.
"Harry! Speak to me!"
The face of Albus Dumbledore leaned over into the field of vision, which had been occupied by a distant marble ceiling.
"You're annoying," said the empty voice. "You should die."
Chapter 44 Humanism, Part 2
"Forks!"
said Albus Dumbledore, his voice cracking.
"Help him, please!"
A brilliant creature of red gold shuffled into the field of vision, looking down quizzically, and it began to croon. The meaningless chirps slid off the emptiness. There was nothing onto which they could hold.
"You're noisy," said the voice. "You should die."
"Chocolate,"
Albus Dumbledore said.
"You need chocolate and your friends, but I dare not take you back."
Then a shining raven came and spoke in Professor Flitwick's voice, whereupon Albus Dumbledore gasped in sudden comprehension and cursed aloud at his own stupidity. The empty thing laughed at that, for it had retained the capacity to be amused. And a moment later, they all vanished in another flash of fire. It was only a moment, it seemed, between when Flitwick's raven had flown to elsewhere and when Albus Dumbledore reappeared in another crack of red and golden fire with Harry in his arms. But somehow, in that time, Hermione had already managed to fill her hands with chocolate. Before Hermione even got there, chocolate had zoomed off the table and straight into Harry's mouth, which a tiny part of her mind said was unfair. He had gotten a chance to do it for her. Harry spat the chocolate back out again.
"Go away,"
said a voice so empty it wasn't even cold. Everything seemed to freeze. Everyone who had been moving toward Harry halted, all movements broken by the shock of those two dead words. Then,
"No,"
said Albus Dumbledore,
"I will not."
And time resumed again, even as another piece of chocolate zoomed off the table and into Harry's mouth. Hermione was close enough now that she could see Harry's expression become more hateful, as his mouth chewed with a mechanical, unnatural rhythm. The headmaster's voice was grim as iron.
"Phileas, call Minerva. Tell her she must come at speed."
Professor Flitwick whispered to his silver raven, and it flew into the air and vanished. Another piece of chocolate floated into Harry's mouth, and the mechanical chewing continued. There were more students gathering around where the headmaster watched over Harry with grim eyes. Neville, Seamus, Dean, Lavender, Ernie, Terry, Anthony, none of them daring to approach any closer than Hermione had.
"What can we do?"
said Dean in a trembling voice.
"Back off and give him more space," said the dry voice of Professor Quirrell.
"No,"
interrupted the headmaster. "Let him be surrounded by his friends."
Harry swallowed his chocolate and said in that empty voice,
"They're stupid. They should
As another piece of chocolate entered his mouth. Hermione saw the looks of shock that crossed their faces.
"It doesn't mean it, does he?"
Seamus said, like he was begging.
"You don't understand,"
Hermione said, her voice breaking.
"That's not Harry."
And she sat up before she said anything more, but she had to say that much. She saw from the look on his face that Neville understood, and she also saw that the others didn't. If Harry had really never thought anything like that, then being exposed to a Dementor for less than a minute wouldn't have made him say it. That's what they were probably thinking. Less than a minute of Dementor exposure couldn't create a whole new evil person inside you out of nothing. But if that person was already there...
"Does the headmaster know?"
Hermione looked up at the headmaster and found that Albus Dumbledore was gazing at her, and that his blue eyes had grown suddenly piercing.
"Do not speak of it,"
said the will of Dumbledore to her.
"You know,"
thought Hermione,
"about his dark side."
"I know, but this is beyond even that. Fawkes's song cannot reach him where he is lost."
"What can we..."
"I have a plan,"
sent the headmaster.
"Patience."
Something about the tenor of that thought made Hermione nervous.
"What sort of plan?"
"It is better that you not know,"
sent the headmaster. Now Hermione was getting really nervous. She didn't know how much the headmaster knew about Harry's dark side.
"A fair point,"
sent the headmaster.
"I am about to tell you. Steel yourself so as to not react. Are you ready? Good. I am going to pretend to cast the killing curse on Professor McGonagall. Do not react, Hermione."
That took work. The headmaster really was crazy. That wouldn't bring Harry out of his dark side. Harry would go completely berserk. He'd kill the headmaster.
"But that is not true darkness,"
sent Albus Dumbledore.
That is protectiveness. That is love. Fawkes will be able to reach him then. And when Harry sees that Minerva is alive after all, it will return him fully.
The thought came to Hermione.
I doubt that will work,
sent the headmaster.
And you may not like the way he reacts if you try, but you may try if you wish.
Yeah, she hadn't really meant that seriously. It was too... Then her eyes moved, breaking gaze with the headmaster, going to the boy looking around with empty, despising eyes as his mouth kept chewing and swallowing bar after bar of chocolate without effect. Her heart wrenched, and suddenly a lot of things didn't seem to matter. Only that there was a chance. There was a compulsion to chew and swallow chocolate. The response compulsion was killing. People had gathered around and stared. That was annoying. The response to annoyance was killing. Other people were chattering in the background. That was insolent. The response to insolence was to inflict pain. But since none of them were useful, killing them would be simpler. Killing all those people would be difficult. But many of them didn't trust Quirrell, who was strong. Finding exactly the right trigger could cause them all to kill each other. Then a person leaned over into the field of vision and did something completely strange. Something that belonged to a foreign mode of thought, for which there was only a single response stored anywhere. She heard the gasps around her, and they didn't matter. She maintained the kiss on those chocolate-smeared lips as the tears welled in her eyes. And Harry's arms came up and pushed her away, and his lips yelled,
"I told you, no kissing!"
"I think he'll be all right now,"
the headmaster said, looking at where Harry was crying in great, wretched sobs as Fawkes crooned over him.
"Excellently done, Miss Granger. Do you know, not even I would have expected that to actually work."
The Phoenix Song wasn't meant for her, Hermione knew, but she could still be soothed by it, which she needed, because her life was officially over. Chapter 45 Humanism, Part 3 Fawkes's song gently trailed off into nothing. Harry sat up from where he had lain on the winter-blasted grass, Fawkes still perched on his shoulder. There were intakes of breath from all around him.
"Harry," said Seamus in a wavering voice, "are you all right?"
The peace of the Phoenix was still in him, and warmth from where Fawkes perched. Warmth spreading out through him, and the memory of the song still alive in the Phoenix's presence. There were terrible things that had happened to him, terrible thoughts that had passed through him. He had regained an impossible memory, for all that the Dementor had made him desecrate it. A strange word kept echoing in his mind, and all of that could be put on hold for later, while the Phoenix still shone red and gold beneath the setting sun. Fawkes cawed at him.
something I have to do?
Harry said to Fawkes.
What?
Fawkes bobbed its head in the direction of the Dementor. Harry looked at the unseeable horror still in its cage, then back at the Phoenix, puzzled.
Mr. Potter?
Said Minerva McGonagall's voice from behind him.
Are you all right?
Harry climbed to his feet and turned. Minerva McGonagall was looking at him, looking very worried. Albus Dumbledore beside her was studying him carefully. Phileas Flitwick appeared tremendously relieved, and all the students were just plain staring.
I think so, Professor McGonagall,
Harry said calmly. He almost said Minerva before managing to stop himself. While Fawkes was on his shoulder, at least, Harry was fine. It might be that he would collapse a moment after Fawkes left, but somehow thoughts like that didn't seem important.
I think I'm okay.
There ought to have been cheering, or sighs of relief, or something, but no one seemed to know what to say. No one at all. The peace of the Phoenix lingered. Harry turned back.
Hermione,
he said. Everyone with the tiniest smidgen of romance in their hearts held their breath.
I don't really know how to say thank you graciously,
Harry said quietly,
any more than I know how to apologize. All I can say is that if you're wondering whether it was the right thing to do, it was.
The boy and the girl gazed into each other's eyes.
Sorry,
Harry said.
About what happens next. If there's anything I can do...
No,
Hermione said back.
There isn't. It's all right, though.
She turned from Harry and walked away, toward the path that led back to the gates of Hogwarts. A number of girls gave Harry puzzled looks and then followed her. As they went, you could hear the excited questions starting. Harry looked at them as they left, turned back to look at the other students. They'd seen him on the ground, screaming, and... Fawkes nuzzled his cheek briefly. And that would help them, someday. Understanding that the boy who lived could also be hurt, could be wretched, so that when they were hurt and wretched themselves, they would remember seeing Harry writhing on the ground and know that their own pain and troubles didn't mean they'd never amount to anything. Had the headmaster calculated that when he had let the other students stay and watch? Harry's eyes went back to the tall, tattered cloak, almost absent-mindedly, and without really being aware of what he was speaking, Harry said,
"It shouldn't ought to exist."
"Ah," said a dry, precise voice.
"I thought you might say that. I am very sorry to tell you, Mr. Potter, that Dementors cannot be killed. Many have tried."
"Really?"
Harry said, still absent-mindedly.
What did they try?"
"There is a certain extremely dangerous and destructive spell," Professor Quirrell said, "which I will not name here. A spell of cursed fire. It is what you would use to destroy an ancient device such as the Sorting Hat. It has no effect on Dementors. They are
undying. They are not undying, said the headmaster.
The words mild, the gaze sharp.
They do not possess eternal life. They are wounds in the world, and attacking a wound only makes it larger.
Harry said.
Suppose you threw it into the sun. Would it be destroyed?
Throw it into the sun?
Squeaked Professor Flitwick, looking like he wanted to faint.
It seems unlikely, Mr. Potter, Professor Quirrell said dryly. The sun is very large, after all. I doubt the Dementor would have much effect on it. But it is not a test I would like to try, Mr. Potter, just in case.
I see, Harry said.
Fawkes cawed a final time, mantled his wings around Harry's head, and then launched himself from Harry. Launched himself straight toward the Dementor, screaming a great piercing cry of defiance that echoed around the field. And before anyone could react to that, there was a flash of fire, and Fawkes was gone. The peace faded a little. The warmth faded a little. Harry took in a deep breath, let it out again.
Yep,
Harry said.
Still alive.
Again, that silence. Again, the absence of cheering. No one seemed to know how to respond.
It's good to know you're fully recovered, Mr. Potter,
Professor Quirrell said firmly, as though to deny any other possibility.
Now, I believe Miss Ransom was up next.
That started a bit of an argument in which Professor Quirrell was right and everyone else was wrong. The defense professor pointed out that, despite the understandable emotions of all concerned, the chance of a similar mishap occurring to any other student verged on the infinitesimal. The more so, as they now knew to avoid mischances with wands. And, meanwhile, there were other students who needed to take their own best chance at casting a corporeal Patronus charm, or else learn the feeling of a Dementor so they could flee and discover their own degree of vulnerability. In the end, it turned out that Dean Thomas and Ron Weasley of Gryffindor were the only ones left who were willing to go anywhere near the Dementor, which simplified the argument. Harry glanced in the Dementor's direction. The word echoed in his mind again.
All right,
Harry thought to himself.
If the Dementor is a riddle, what is the answer? And just like that, it was obvious.
Harry looked at the tarnished, slightly corroded cage. He saw what lay beneath the tall, tattered cloak. That was it, then. Professor McGonagall came and spoke to Harry. She hadn't seen the worst of it, so there was only a slight glitter of water in her eyes. Harry told her that he needed to talk to her afterward and ask her a question he'd put off for a while. But that didn't need to happen right now, if she was busy. There was a certain look about her which suggested that she had been pulled away from something important, and Harry observed this to her, and said that she honestly didn't need to feel guilty about leaving. This earned him something of a sharp look, but then leave she did, hurriedly, with a promise that they would talk later. Dean Thomas cast his white bear again, even in the Dementor's presence, and Ron Weasley put up an adequate shield of sparkling mist, which concluded the day so far as everyone else was concerned, and Professor Flitwick began to herd the students back to Hogwarts. When it was clear that Harry meant to stay behind, Professor Flitwick looked at him quizzically, and Harry, for his part, glanced significantly at Dumbledore. Harry didn't know what Professor Flitwick made of that, but after a sharp gaze of warning, his head of house departed. And so remained only Harry, Professor Quirrell, Headmaster Dumbledore, and an aura trio. It would have been better to get rid of the trio first, but Harry couldn't think of a good way to do that.
"Excuse me," Harry said. "I'd like to have another go at the Dementor."
Harry's request met with a certain amount of opposition of the "you're completely insane" variety, but it was only Aura Butnaru who actually said that out loud.
"Forks told me to,"
Harry said. This did not overcome all the opposition, despite the look of shock it produced on Dumbledore's face. The argument went on, and it was starting to wear the edges off the Phoenix's remaining piece, which annoyed Harry, though only a little.
"Look," Harry said, "I'm pretty sure I know what I was doing wrong before. There's a kind of person who has to use a different sort of warm and happy thought. Just let me try it, okay?"
This didn't prove persuasive either.
"I think," Professor Quirrell said finally, staring at Harry with narrowed eyes, "that if we do not allow him to do this under supervision, he may, at some point or other, sneak off and look for a Dementor on his own. Do I accuse you falsely, Mr. Potter?"
There was an appalled pause at this. It seemed like a good time to play his trump card.
"I don't mind if the headmaster keeps his own Patronus up," Harry said. "For I will be in the presence of a Dementor just the same, Patronus or no."
There was confusion at this. Even Professor Quirrell looked puzzled. But the headmaster finally acceded, since it didn't seem likely that Harry could be hurt through four Patronuses.
"If the Dementor couldn't reach through your Patronus on some level, Albus Dumbledore, you wouldn't see a naked man painful to look upon."
Harry didn't say it out loud, for obvious reasons. And they began to walk toward the Dementor.
"Headmaster," Harry said, "suppose the Ravenclaw door asked you this riddle. What lies at the center of a Dementor? What would you say?"
"Fear," said the headmaster.
It was a simple enough mistake. The Dementor approached and the fear came over you. The fear hurt. You felt the fear weakening you. You wanted the fear to go away. It was natural to think the fear was the problem. So, they'd concluded that the Dementor was a creature of pure fear, that there was nothing there to fear but fear itself, that the Dementor couldn't hurt you if you weren't afraid. But...
"What lies at the center of a Dementor? Fear. What is so horrible that the mind refuses to see it? Fear. What is impossible to kill? Fear."
It didn't quite fit, once you thought about it, though it was clear enough why people would be reluctant to look beyond the first answer. People understood fear. People knew what they were supposed to do about fear. So, faced with a Dementor, it wouldn't exactly be comforting to ask, "What if the fear is just a side effect rather than the main problem?" They had come very close to the Dementor's cage guarded by four Patronuses, when there came sharp intakes of breath from the three Aurors and Professor Quirrell. Everyone's faces turned to look at the Dementor, seeming to listen. There was horror on Aura Gorionov's face. Then Professor Quirrell raised his head, his face hard, and spat toward the Dementor.
"It did not like having its prey taken from it, I suppose,"
Dumbledore said quietly.
"Well, if it becomes necessary, Quirinus, there will always be a refuge for you at Hogwarts."
What did it say?"
said Harry. Every head swung to stare at him.
"You didn't hear it?" Dumbledore said.
Harry shook his head.
"It said to me," said Professor Quirrell, "that it knew me, and that it would hunt me down some day, wherever I tried to hide."
His face was rigid, showing no fright.
"Ah,"
Harry said,
"I wouldn't worry about that, Professor Quirrell. It's not like Dementors can actually talk or think. The structure they have is borrowed from your own mind and expectations."
Now everyone was giving him very strange looks. The Aurors were glancing nervously at each other, at the Dementor, at Harry. And they stood directly before the Dementor's cage.
"They are wounds in the world,"
Harry said.
"It's just a wild guess, but I'm guessing the one who said that was Godric Gryffindor."
"Yes," said Dumbledore. "How did you know?"
"It is a common misconception,"
thought Harry,
"that all the best rationalists are sorted into Ravenclaw, leaving none for other houses. This is not so. Being sorted into Ravenclaw indicates that your strongest virtue is curiosity, wondering, and desiring to know the true answer. And this is not the only virtue a rationalist needs. Sometimes you have to work hard on a problem and stick to it for a while. Sometimes you need a clever plan for finding out. And sometimes what you need more than anything else to see an answer is the courage to face it."
Harry's gaze went to what lay beneath the cloak. The horror, far worse than any decaying mummy. Rowena Ravenclaw might also have known, for it was an obvious enough riddle once you saw it as a riddle. And it was also obvious why the Patronuses were animals. The animals didn't know, and so were sheltered from the fear. But Harry knew, and would always know, and would never be able to forget. He'd tried to teach himself to face reality without flinching, and though Harry had not yet mastered that art, still those grooves had been worn into his mind, the learned reflex to look toward the painful thought instead of away. Harry would never be able to forget by thinking warm, happy thoughts about something else, and that was why the spell hadn't worked for him. So Harry would think a warm, happy thought that wasn't about something else. Harry drew forth his wand that Professor Flitwick had returned to him, put his feet into the beginning stance for the Patronus charm. Within his mind, Harry discarded the last remnants of the Peace of the Phoenix, put aside the calm, the dreamlike state, remembered instead Fawkes's piercing cry, and roused himself for battle. Called upon the pieces and elements of himself to awaken, raised up within himself all the strength that the Patronus charm could ever draw upon, to put himself into the right frame of mind for the final warm and happy thought. Remembered all bright things. The books his father had bought him. Mum's smile when Harry had handmade her a Mother's Day card, an elaborate thing that had used half a pound of square electronic parts from the garage to flash lights and beep a little tune, and had taken him 3 days to make. Professor McGonagall telling him that his parents had died protecting him, as they had. Realizing that Hermione was keeping up with him and even running faster, that they could be true rivals and friends. Coaxing Draco out of the darkness, watching him slowly move toward the light. Neville and Seamus and Lavender and Dean and everyone else who looked up to him, everyone that he would have fought to protect if anything threatened Hogwarts. Everything that made life worth living. His wand rose into the starting position for the Patronus charm. Harry thought of the stars, the image that had almost held off the Dementor even without a Patronus. Only this time, Harry added the missing ingredient. He'd never truly seen it, but he'd seen the pictures and the video. The earth, blazing blue and white with reflective sunlight as it hung in space amid the black void and the brilliant points of light. It belonged there, within that image, because it was what gave everything else its meaning. The earth was what made the stars significant, made them more than uncontrolled fusion reactions, because it was the earth that would someday colonize the galaxy and fulfill the promise of the night sky. Would they still be plagued by Dementors, the children's children's children, the distant descendants of humankind as they strode from star to star? No, of course not. The Dementors were only little nuisances, paling into nothingness in the light of that promise. Not unkillable, not invincible, not even close. You had to put up with little nuisances if you were one of the lucky and unlucky few to be born on Earth. On ancient Earth, as it would be remembered someday. That, too, was part of what it meant to be alive. If you were one of the tiny handful of sentient beings born into the beginning of all things, before intelligent life had come fully into its power, that the much vaster future depended on what you did here, now, in the earliest days of dawn, when there was still so much darkness to be fought, and temporary nuisances like Dementors. Mum and Dad, Hermione's friendship and Draco's journey, Neville and Seamus and Lavender and Dean, the blue sky and brilliant sun and all bright things, the earth, the stars, the promise, everything humanity was and everything it would become. On the wand, Harry's fingers moved into their starting positions. He was ready now to think the right sort of warm and happy thought. And Harry's eyes stared directly at that which lay beneath the tattered cloak, looked straight at that which had been named Dementor. The void, the emptiness, the hole in the universe, the absence of colour and space, the open drain through which warmth poured out of the world. The fear it exuded stole away all happy thoughts. Its closeness drained your power and strength. Its kiss would destroy everything that you were.
Ah, I know you now,
Harry thought as his wand twitched once, twice, thrice and four times as his fingers slid exactly the right distances.
I comprehend your nature. You symbolize death. Through some law of magic, you are a shadow that death casts into the world. And death is not something I will ever embrace. It is only a childish thing that the human species has not yet outgrown. And someday, we'll get over it. And people won't have to say goodbye anymore.
The wand rose up and leveled straight at the Dementor.
Expecto Patronum!
The thought exploded from him like a breaking dam, surged down his arm, into his wand, burst from it as blazing white light. Light that became corporeal, took on shape and substance. A figure with two arms, two legs, and a head, standing upright. The animal Homo sapiens, the shape of a human being. Glowing brighter and brighter as Harry poured all his strength into his spell, blazing with incandescent light brighter than the fading sunset, the Aurors and Professor Quirrell shielding their eyes in shock.
And someday, when the descendants of humanity have spread from star to star, they won't tell the children about the history of ancient Earth until they're old enough to bear it. And when they learn, they'll weep to hear that such a thing as death had ever once existed.
The figure of a human shone more brightly now than the noonday sun, so radiant that Harry could feel the warmth of it on his skin. And Harry sent out all his defiance at the shadow of death, opening all the floodgates inside him to make that bright shape blaze even brighter and yet brighter.
You are not invincible, and someday the human species will end you. I will end you if I can, by the power of mind and magic and science. I won't cower in fear of death, not while I have a chance of winning. I won't let death touch me. I won't let death touch the ones I love. And even if you do end me before I end you, another will take my place. And another, until the wound in the world is healed at last.
Harry lowered his wand, and the bright figure of a human faded away. Slowly, he exhaled. Like waking up from a dream, like opening his eyes after sleep, Harry's gaze moved away from the cage and looked around and saw that everyone was staring at him. Albus Dumbledore was staring at him. Professor Quirrell was staring at him. The Aura Trio was staring at him. They were all looking at him like they'd just seen him destroy a Dementor. The tattered cloak lay empty within the cage. Chapter 46. Humanism, Part 4. The last tip of the sun was sinking below the horizon, the red light fading from the treetops, only the blue sky illuminating the six people standing upon the winter-dried and snow-spotted grass, near a vacant cage on whose floor lay an empty, tattered cloak. Harry felt, well, normal again, sane-ish. The spell hadn't undone the day and its damage, hadn't made the injuries as if they had never been, but its hurts had been bandaged, ameliorated? It was hard to describe. Dumbledore was also looking healthier, though not fully restored. The old wizard's head turned for a moment, locked eyes with Professor Quirrell, then looked back to Harry.
"Harry," Dumbledore said, "are you about to collapse in exhaustion and possibly die?"
"No, strangely enough," Harry said. "That took something out of me, but a lot less than I thought it would. Or maybe it gave something back as well as taking. Honestly, I expected my body to be hitting the ground with a thud about now."
There was a distinct body hitting the ground with a thud-ish sort of sound.
"Thank you for taking care of that, Quirinus," said Dumbledore to Professor Quirrell,
who was now standing above and behind the unconscious forms of the three Aurors.
"I confess I'm still feeling a bit peaky, though I shall handle the memory charms myself."
Professor Quirrell inclined his head and then looked at Harry.
"I will omit a good deal of useless incredulity."